So did you hear that conversation between Eusebius Makeza and Suzanne Daniels, the former head of legal services at Eskom? I mean, she's admitted essentially that she must be prosecuted for unlawfully signing off on former Eskom board chair Ben Ngubane's legal fees, which he incurred while he was still working for the SABC. Now, it gets complicated because you'll remember, and some people have been making this argument that, look, this is the former employee of Eskom who was regarded as a whistleblower for her submissions in Parliament. However, there was that damning disciplinary hearing that was chaired by Advocate Nazir Kasim, who found that she was complicit in questionable contracts worth billions of rands. Now, take a listen to a short snippet of that interview.
You authorized legal fees knowingly, unlawfully. That means you broke the law. You're an officer of the court. Is an officer of the court allowed to have done what you did?
No.
So what now? What happens to officers of the court who break the law?
They get prosecuted.
So this opens up a number of conversations, doesn't it? I mean, about how difficult it is to speak out, you know, to whistleblow when you are constantly receiving pressure from your managers to do what is not right. But there's also a conversation to be heard about the moral, or call it the ethical responsibility, that public servants have to stand for what is right. And in this case, Suzanne Daniels says it was simply hard.
It was a very difficult time in my life. I regret that I did not speak out earlier. That's one regret that will live with me till my dying day. I could have, you know, had the guts to do so much earlier, but I did have to consider my personal circumstances. I'm a single mom with a child in matric at the time. So it was balancing that. But when I saw that this was actually costing the country a lot more than what it was costing me personally, I had no choice but to speak out.
All right, let's now speak to David Lewis, who is the executive director at Corruption Watch. Mr. Lewis, thank you so much for your time. Now, I've been spending a lot of time at the State Capture Commission, and I had witness after witness, both current and former Eskom managers, speaking about the pressure that their former executives like Machela Koko and even Brian Molefe put them under to do their illegal bidding. Now, should we accept the explanation that they didn't have a choice, or should we say you should have taken a stand and do what is right? Or is that a simplistic approach?
Well, you know, of course, we would prefer that they took a stand, as you put it, and did what was right. You know. I think there are three classes of whistleblowers. There's the sort of heroic, if you like, citizen whistleblower who out of sheer sort of moral conviction, blows the whistle on his boss or supplier or powerful politician as soon as he or she sees corruption being committed. And these are, as I say, the heroic whistleblowers. There's a group, and I think Suzanne falls into that, who did the things that she knew at the time were either wrong or skating close to the edge of what was the wrong thing to do. And I know Suzanne, and I know she came under incredible pressure from a thoroughly corrupt executive suite in which she was, you know, one of the very few women, very powerful men, very well connected, leaning on her. The fact that she is an officer of the court, as Eusebius says in the investigation, complicates things as well. And she was an officer of the company, complicates things as well. But I would, before utterly condemning Suzanne as I think the Eskom board has effectively done, I would be a little bit more circumspect. I would have a little more humility and a little more sort of appreciation of her difficulties. And then there's the third category of whistleblower, which, you know, somebody like Angela Grisi fits very. I should say about Suzanne, I don't understand that Suzanne personally enriched herself from anything that she did. And that's an important consideration, I think, an important factor in mitigation. You know, then there is the Angelo Grisi. He's, you know, here's a person who's as crooked as Gavin Watson is, but who, because he feared Gavin Watson was going to spill the beans on him before he spilled the beans on Gavin Watson, got his knife in first. And we need people like that badly for mounting prosecutions. And we may even, you know, extend to them huge leniency or immunity from prosecution when we do so in order to be able to get a bigger fish. Mm. That doesn't mean that we have any sort of moral respect for the person involved, but it does mean that we respect the contribution that he can make. We value the contribution that he can make to the prosecutorial process.
So there's also then this discussion around the protection that whistleblowers should have, because in this case, Suzanne Daniel speaks about how she had a child in Metric. It was really tough, she says. But some people mention economic reasons as well for not standing up for what is right. Is there enough protection for whistleblowers?
You know, it's very, we have a Protection Disclosures Act which protects whistleblowers in the employment relationship. In other words, if you blow the whistle on an employer or person senior to you in the company, you can't get prejudiced in your employment relationship by that. It's very difficult to legally protect other whistleblowers. You know, the best way to protect whistleblowers is to respect what they've done. And, you know, as I say, there are those three gradations. You know, I think the heroes who do it out of sheer moral conviction deserve to be treated like heroes. The people who do it because they came under enormous pressure and who didn't personally enrich themselves as a result of doing it, although they may have kept their jobs, you know. Suzanne had refused to do what the likes of Koko and Molefe demanded of her. She may very well have lost her job. And so to that extent, I suppose there is a degree of personal enrichment, but she never really shared in the loot. You know, those are to be, understood, if you like, and treated with, as I say, some circumspection and humility. Mm. And then there are the greasies who are to be condemned, but whom we may nevertheless thank for the information that they provide.
Mm. What lessons do you think we must take from this? I mean, as a country that has, you know, some people like the South African Council of Churches argues that we've lost our moral legitimacy and there's just corruption everywhere, and some people are even prepared to do certain things that they know are wrong just simply because, you know, people that are paying their salaries are telling them to do so. What lessons are we learning from this?
You know, I think, you know, not only from this, but you know, generally, South Africans are, I think, having to learn some very severe lessons about our moral, our collective moral compass. You know, the term Ubuntu is often, you know, thrown around South Africa as though, you know, we all assume that this is a society characterized by Ubuntu. I'm not so sure that that's so, and I think we need to face up to that. I mean, corruption is stealing from your poor neighbor. I mean, driving recklessly on the roads is endangering the lives of others. And these are not reflective of spirits of Ubuntu or of moral courage. And so I think we need to really examine ourselves. I think this is a public conversation we need to have, instead of asserting that we're just simply claiming to be a country of characterized by Ubuntu, when in fact, you know, everything that we do and everything we read about in the newspaper suggests precisely the opposite.
Mm. David Lewis, the executive director at Corruption Watch. Thank you. But then again, there are legal implications to what people say, especially if they're somehow being linked to, you know, the state capture project and the investigations that are currently underway. Brigadier Hangwani Mulaudzi is the Hawks spokesperson. Hangwani, thank you so much for your time. So what happens now? Is the Hawks going to investigate? I mean, you've got a former employee of Eskom admitting to having signed off on something that was unlawful. You know, she says she was pressured, but she does say that she was wrong to do so, and she admits she must be prosecuted.
Clement, hi. Thank you. Well, we would be very much interested on that admission. And hence, through my interaction with the investigators, we felt it would be necessary if we can be able to get hold of the lady. However, there are legal implications that we need to take care of before we even get to that stage. Firstly, she has to give us that statement, of course, in the presence of a lawyer, so that if there are any comebacks, we'll be able to deal with that matter as and when it comes. But what is critical for us is that people should know that despite the fact that there was this admission today, there's a lot of investigations that we are dealing with, different legs of investigations at ESCOM, and it would be very much interested to find out which leg would then should be able to assist in that investigation.
All right, but you're certainly going to be looking into it as the Hawks.
Of course, we will be looking at it.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Hawks spokesperson, Brigadier Hangwani Mulaudzi.